The News Dissector with Danny Schechter, Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. It's time for News Dissector Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. You can join us on the phone at 888-874-4888, and we have a interesting program, to say the least, for you, a very topical and timely one as well. We're going to be talking about the crisis in Syria and then segueing into a discussion of the American economy. Our guests today are people who have written widely and well about all of this, who have a lot to say that you haven't heard in our media, because there's a sort of media environment in this country where one side gets all the coverage and any perspective that challenges the conventional narrative doesn't seem to get any. So we're going to be questioning all of that. We have Russ Baker, the investigative reporter, joining us, and from London, William Bowles, williambowles.info, who is very critical of the media coverage and of the Western intervention in Syria. And so we're going to hear from him and get another perspective from him. And then in the second half hour, we're going to be talking with Eve Smith. Eve Smith is the editor of the must-read NakedCapitalism.com blog. She monitors Wall Street and the financial system from the inside. She was a former trader, that's with a D, and also a financial analyst. She's extremely brilliant. Her website is a must-read for everybody in the financial industry, even when they disagree with her, which is often. So she'll be joining us as well. So we have a lot coming up this afternoon, on NewsDissector.com. Thank you for joining us. And here we are, another week, another time.
We're going to fix that technical problem.
ABC.
NBC.
CBS.
CNN.
Fox News. Breaking news.
Faking news. The media war. It's time to get sore.
This is some kind of bizarre reality TV show.
I worked at ABC News, worked at CNN. To see so many colleagues, if you will, acting as a megaphone for the military and for the administration.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
The Pentagon also controls the timing of bad news, the heavy-handed way of managing the message.
Media war.
Managing the message.
Media war.
All the networks wanted to have was a countdown to war.
Overemphasis.
48 hours to war. Dun, 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 dun. Showdown to Saddam.
The purpose of journalism is to question the prevailing wisdom. Question the prevailing wisdom.
Question the prevailing wisdom. Well, we're still here trying to do that as another war kind of looms on the horizon, a war against Iran, and certainly more intervention in Syria, more international intervention, more arms going in there from all different organizations and groups, including Al-Qaeda, which now says it supports the Syrian opposition. So we have a very complex mosaic there, and we hope to help unpack it a bit for you, untangle it a little bit, and offer a perspective that we're not getting very often. Russ Baker is a journalist who has been writing on the Who, What, Why blog every day, you know, analysis. He's written several books, including, a devastating account to the Bush family of their role in politics. And so we'll be talking with him in a second. But first, I want to give you a sense of how others in the world see what's going on, because we are getting a very one-sided picture. And, of course, being in New York, you know, a UN resolution yesterday condemning, but an unenforceable resolution condemning Syria was widely reported. All these episodes have been widely reported. We're mourning now the passing of Tony Shaheed, the great New York Times reporter who died apparently of an asthma attack as he was secretly going into Syria to try to get some more information on the Syrian resistance army, and that's a big loss for journalism. He'll be mourned by all of his colleagues here in New York and around the world, because he worked for many newspapers. So there is a whole conflict here, a conflict of how to view this, how to see it. If you lived in China today, you might have gotten the China Daily, their newspaper, a little bigger in circulation than the USA Today, certainly. But China, The lead story, China stands firm on Syria. China opposes armed intervention or forcing a so-called regime change in Syria, according to China's deputy representative to the UN. We condemn acts of violence against innocent civilians. We urge the government and all political factions of Syria to immediately and fully end all acts of violence and quickly restore stability and the normal social order. But they also condemn intervention from other countries. That's the view in China. What about Russia, which also voted against the resolution? Here's a report yesterday from RT, Russia Today. Your news dissector is among the people quoted.
Getting serious in Syria. I mean, very serious.
The Syrian crisis at a peak, diplomatic tensions flying high.
The United States is disgusted that a couple members of this council continue to prevent us from fulfilling our sole purpose here.
As American officials switch on the traditional approach of dealing with regimes they just don't like.
Assad is crazy. He's a brutal dictator. He's killing his own people. This is the same narrative that we heard about Gaddafi.
The media is right there to echo whatever spin is presented by those in power.
Well, how disgusted are you?
Disgusted, Richard.
They identify with people in power. They echo what those people say. Secondly, they don't look too closely at the facts.
An information war kick-started as Russia and China refused to stand behind America's position.
Many are chanting, Russia is killing our children after a veto of
the Russians, and then the Chinese stand in the way at the UN.
But it was vetoed by Russia and China. Secretary of State Clinton reacted bitterly.
The Russian and Chinese veto of a regime change resolution reacted to with confrontation by politicians.
Clinton suggested Russia and China will eventually have to answer to the Syrian people for prolonging their pain.
And news headlines attacking the two countries without detail or context.
You represent a serious newspaper. Don't be ridiculous, please. No, my answer to your serious question, don't be ridiculous.
The media not showing the will to explain what led to the veto.
It's a crack in the wall of lies, basically, or a rip in the tissue of lies that's being presented by the media here. If you look closely, or even at all, at what Russia was saying, that there was violence taking place on both sides, you'd understand that what was happening was there was an armed insurgency backed by people from the outside.
But this is an inconvenient truth. The media have long dubbed the armed groups a popular democratic uprising.
That's Anastasia Chukina of RT here in New York offering an analysis of the kind you never hear and probably never will hear on American TV. The Pew Center on Press and the Public has come out with a new report saying 58% of the American people want the U.S. to get tough on Iran. In other words, when this kind of one-sided coverage that we've been having in our country without any context, without any background, tends to reinforce the most hawkish views, not just on the right, where you would expect it, but also among liberals on the left who are calling for various forms of humanitarian intervention, which often end up killing civilians and imposing regime change that the public doesn't want, as in Libya. So these are complex issues, important issues, but they're not issues that get explained too clearly in our media. That's why I invited Russ Baker to join me this morning. He's written a piece called Seriously, where he actually takes apart a lot of the narratives that we see in the American media. Are you there, Russ? No Russ either. Okay, I'm not sure why we're having these problems today. People are expecting to be called. They say they'll be called, and then they're not there. Hey, so I'll just carry on without them. You know, one of the things that we've noticed is that in Syria, what started as maybe a popular revolt, like the Arab Spring, and that was took place on the 26th of January, 2011, but it was only a sporadic occurrence until mass protests erupted in Damascus in March. The situation quickly developed into a full-scale national uprising, reports Wikipedia, which has a very good chronology and account of this. And they put it into the context of the Arab Spring, a social upheaval. But you'll notice that in Egypt and Tunisia, you had popular movements who were basically engaging in nonviolent protest against despotic regimes and helped topple those regimes by sheer numbers and media attention and the like. But in this case, what we see is the quick emergence of armed groups who are actually attacking the Syrian government. The Syrian government is retaliating and attacking them and any civilians who get in the way. So you have a situation where what starts as a small protest turns into an armed uprising and an armed conflict. Mutineers and army defectors have formed fighting units, which began an insurgency campaign against the Syrian regular army. As a result, violent clashes began across the country, increasing by the end of the year, factional fighting patterns and this emergence of something called the Free Syrian Army. That's the army that Tony Shahid was going into Syria to try to find out more about. As in all of these cases, the Libyan rebels, for example, there's no clarity about exactly who these people are and what they want. And so as a consequence, we're facing a situation where we are expected to fill in the blanks. So things are basically framed as the rebels versus the despotic government. In this case, the Syrian government, incidentally, which was originally overthrown by the CIA back in at the end of World War II, and has been, a nationalist group, certainly an authoritarian regime, no question. But nevertheless, this regime has now been come under attack from a wide range of forces and arms being supplied by neighboring countries like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, which is no friend of democracy itself, is supporting the opposition in Syria, as is, believe it or not, Al-Qaeda. Swahiri, the number one man, I guess, number two man in Al-Qaeda, is now supporting the opposition in Syria. So, and then into the mix here, you have religious aspects, you have all kinds of factions, and it becomes a very complex mosaic, but it gets summarized for us into the good guys versus the bad guys frame. And that's the real problem here, trying to sort all of this stuff out. The opposition in Syria, there's a Syrian National Council, a National Coordinating Committee for Democratic Change, a General Commission of the Syrian Revolution, local coordinating committees, anti-government protesters, other opposition groups, and a free Syrian army, which is basically, an offshoot of the Syrian army, where there have been people mutinying. We don't know exactly why. Some of them seem to have religious problems and ethnic issues. So in any event, we have a crisis situation, and this crisis situation is continuing with a buildup in demands that the government of Syria resign, that the government of Syria step aside. Russia and China vetoed a resolution by the United Nations. We explained what their positions were. The United States, of course, is on the side of the Syrian people. And, there's a lot of questions really that have to be raised about this, because it seems clear that we're not getting the full story. When I was in Iran recently, a video was played. It was a video that started out with Hillary Clinton speaking about the importance of, freedom in the world, followed by Barack Obama echoing the same message. But the images were the images of the police in the United States repressing the Occupy movement. So in other parts of the world, they have a different view of the United States. The United States that maybe says one thing and does another. A United States that has interests in the world, not just issues in the world, have reasons for doing things that have to do with the interests of our oil industry, for example, our oil industry, as well as other industries that manufacture weapons and the like. We are selling weapons, a big $63 billion deal with Saudi Arabia recently, et cetera, and so forth. So when we look at all of this, we need to look at it through a lens that's a little bit more open. And this is the problem that we had when we went back and looked at the coverage of the war in Iraq, as I did in a film called WMD, Weapons of Mass Deception. What did I find? That the media itself was ahead of the government in promoting war, in promoting conflict, and all the rest of it. So, these are the issues we need to kind of sort out and look through. Russ Baker is with us now. Russ, you've been looking at all this also. Give us the thrust of your argument about this in this brilliant article you wrote, Seriously.
Sure. Now, I haven't been able to hear your discussion thus far, unfortunately, and I hope I'm not repeating anything. But basically, my point in that article published on our website, whowhatwhy.com, is that the media coverage of what is happening in Syria is, and this will be a familiar theme to anyone who listens to Danny and knows his work over the years, is abominable. It is as bad as the reporting that that preceded the invasion of Iraq. It is as bad as the reporting in Libya. And this is a theme that we keep on covering on our site because we're just so frustrated with the failure to make any kind of progress at all on this stuff, even with all these new means of communicating with the internet. We don't see a serious discussion reaching many people in terms of what are the geostrategic agendas behind what is going on here.
You know, what's interesting also is after the Iraq war, some of the poobahs of the mass media, mainstream media, even the network ABC that I used to work for, you know, uttered sort of neo apologies. You know, yes, maybe we bought the Kool-Aid, we drank the Kool-Aid. Maybe we didn't fully appreciate the nuances of the conflict. You know, et cetera and so forth. But nothing seems to have changed. If anything, it seems to have gotten worse. I mean, you're writing on this. Glenn Greenwald's writing on this. William Bowles writing on this. The contributions that I've been making have all been attempting to say, hey, people, ask deeper questions. And I'm talking to the media also. I mean, I'm not like a stranger. I work there. I know these guys, you know. And I'm saying, hey, don't you think it would be a good idea if you're going to cover a conflict to cover it with two sides, if there are more, you know, or more than two sides? How do we account for the fact that Al-Qaeda has now gotten involved in the Syrian opposition? Are they a pro-democracy force? If you read the New York Times editorial page, they're talking about, you know, Russia and China are opposing a pro-democracy movement. Well, is it a pro-democracy movement?
I'll tell you what the problem is here. Because so much of what the media tells us is untrue, that it's impossible for them at any particular point in time suddenly to switch to truth. And because they don't cover the basic motivations behind policy, it's too hard to explain this to their audiences. It would seem like there had been a sudden and dramatic personality change, a whole new worldview embedded, and so forth. I mean, the reality is this: governments don't do things for the reasons that they say they do, almost never. And if they did, it would almost be a dereliction of duty, because the reality is that when you work inside a government, just like when you work inside a company, your job is supposed to be to do what's good or what's perceived to be good for your government or your faction or your bosses, not something else. And so things like going abroad and doing things for democracy in other countries is entirely inconsistent with what the agenda actually is. The agenda, rightly or wrongly, is this so-called national security. Now, the interpretation of that, of course, is all about oil and other natural and strategic resources. And so that is where all the internal discussions go. The external statements are all on a completely different level, and the media has a problem, because what are they going to do? Is ABC News going to say, tonight the government claimed they're going into Syria, but we found the real reason, powerful American corporations that donate tremendous amounts of money to campaigns want to neutralize Syria because they're causing problems for their interests in a neighboring country. I mean, you can't go there.
Well, you know, it's also the question of how news is structured and what news is reported and what news isn't. You know, the United States is about, let's say, to invade or Iran, you know, but Whitney Houston does, you know, at the same time.
Yeah.
What's going to get the attention? What story is going to get the most follow-up? The one that they perceive there's the most interest in the audience, you know, rather than trying to interest the audience in these issues, they're presented in a way that really turns people people off, tunes them out. They really can't follow it all. As a consequence, the narrative, the frame of how the story is put together, is one that's basically intended to reassure Americans. You're good, they're bad. Look at these horrible things happening over there, etc., etc. Always to put American policy objectives in the most beneficent terms possible. By the way, just one second, Russ, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888 if you want to join the conversation. You were saying.
Yeah, I mean, you are the expert. You literally and figuratively wrote the book on all of these things, and so I don't need to tell you, but I mean, my take increasingly from my own work and the difficulty that I've had, within the mainstream or corporate media, getting the truth out, and also, as you know, with my book, Family of Secrets, an entirely new history of the United States, of what the Bush dynasty was really about, what was really going on. This is all shocking. The stuff that we produce at whowhatwhy.com is shocking to people. Now, the reason it's shocking is because they're getting lies all the time. And really what's so insidious about this is that the untruths don't just come from places like Fox News, and they don't just come from entities, large corporate television entities that are expected to be somewhat bland. They come from supposedly liberal institutions. They come from places like newspapers like the New York Times. They come from things like PBS and NPR. Even the liberal magazines, The Nation, some of these others, good in many respects, but ultimately they pull their punches on a lot of things. And the reason that they do, I mean, just has to do with practicality, what they think they can get away with their readers, what is just too shocking, too jarring, what is too upsetting for people.
Well, a lot of it has to do with truth. You know, the theory of power, how they see the country is really organized and in whose interests. If you take an approach, United States is a formal institutional approach. There's our Congress, there's our Supreme Court, there's our White House, there are checks and balances. Everyone is elected and is representative somehow of the voters that they elected. Then you report the news in that way, without asking deeper questions about who's putting up the money here, you know, who's manipulating things behind the scenes, what are the corporate interests actually doing. So your view of things is a rose-colored, through rose-colored glasses, and you don't really get to ask or understand any deeper reasons. Bill Bowles, who I was going to have on the program with us, offers a little bit of a perspective in his website, williambowles.info. He says that, you know, Edward Said, who was a professor at Columbia University, now deceased, called all this Orientalism, the idea that countries, especially those of the Arab world, exist only as inventions in the minds and actions of us in the West. We have a similar invention for Africa, still called, you'll not be surprised to hear, the Dark Continent on the BBC as recently as a couple of weeks ago. A throwaway comment, no doubt, but it illustrates the contradiction of any of us here in the West, allegedly of the left or right, passing judgment on the goings-on former colonies, or in the case of Syria, a relic of the Cold War. It's not surprising that in their present form, all the countries getting, quote, democratized are actually countries that were formerly dominated by colonial masters, borders, languages, as well as irreparable damage that colonizing did to indigenous culture, are still subjected to a Western gaze decades after they allegedly gained their independence.
You know, there's something else going on which is quite insidious. It's been the topic of several of our recent articles, and that is the subterranean plotting going on behind the scenes relative to Syria, to Libya, and so on. In the case of Libya, Syria, for example, the Assad family from the Alawite sect, a Shiite minority in the country, again, just the flip side, in a sense, of Saddam Hussein being part of a particular minority in his country, Sunni in his case. And so what you see there is important alliances that aren't being discussed. For example, Assad being aligned with the Shiites in Iran. Now, on the other side, you've got Saudi Arabia
a Sunni and threatened by an uprising in their own country of Shiites, and not just in their own country, but in the most important oil-bearing region, the Eastern Province. And that uprising is believed to be fomented by those with links to, ta-da, Syria and Iran. And so Saudi Arabia, as one of its top priorities, is obviously for the royal family to stay in power, to suppress the uprising in their country, and that means to suppress what they perceive to be sponsors of the threat to their own power, and that is Syria and Iran. And so I think Saudi Arabia is a key player behind both of these aggressions, much more so, actually, believe it or not, than Israel, which I don't think actually really does have a dog in that fight, or than the United States, similarly.
Well, the Israeli lobby is basically basically trying to get Congress to do take a harder line towards Syria, a harder line towards Iran. In some ways, Syria is the stalking horse. You know, get rid of that government in Syria, and then we can move on in a united way to deal with Iran. So Iran, you know, is very much being targeted right now. And, of course, anything Iran says is treated with with suspicion or negative reactions. The consequence there being that we really don't know much about Iran. I was just in Iran, Russ. I just, you know, I interviewed the president. Now, I'm not saying it was a brilliant interview. It was just a conversation in passing. But certainly they have a different perspective than we do. And that perspective at least deserves to be reported. Here we have increasingly the Daily Beast and other outlets suggesting there's a link between Al-Qaeda and Iran. At the same time, Reuters is reporting that Al-Qaeda is deeply involved in Syria. So how do you make sense of all this?
Well, I'll tell you how you make sense of it, and this gets to another level of the kind of stories that people don't want to touch in this country, that is the relationship between Al-Qaeda and Saudi Arabia. Now, as you may know, on our website, whowhatwhy.com, if you go to the top right-hand column under Original Investigations, you can read an investigation, new evidence linking the Saudi royal family to 11 of the 9/11 hijackers, and I mean in a rather direct sense that has never been reported before. Now, this story, which part of which was broken by us at Who, What, Why, part of which was broken by the Miami Herald, a mainstream paper, has been entirely ignored by the totality of the media establishment, ranging from the mainstream ones all the way over to leftist, liberal websites, magazines, TV shows. They have all ignored this. This stuff is just too disturbing to people. And what you're talking about vis-a-vis Syria with Al-Qaeda coming in, I mean, when you know what the real nature of that relationship is, you realize it's something else entirely is going on. And the effort to try to say that Al-Qaeda and the West disagree on the appropriate course in Syria, I think is just a distraction.
Well, you know, these are issues that really need more attention. They really need to be examined. Russ Baker, the work that you're doing on your website, and, you know, are very courageous because you're tackling a whole narrative that's uncritically accepted by the American people, by the American government, and by the American media. There are very few voices in the media that are challenging any of this at all. There are a couple of websites where you do have more critical ideas being expressed. The ICH Clearinghouse, I'm just trying to think of a bunch of them. Salon has Glenn Greenwald, your website. But these are not really enough to challenge the power of the American media, not just to report something, but to reinforce it endlessly, repeat it. And in that case, it begins to sink into people's minds, you know, and their view of things tends to be very simplistic and is essentially writing a blank check for the administration to engage in yet another war to get us involved in even more intervention. We've just had a report about how the covert agencies of the U.S. military are all coordinating and getting more resources. You can be sure that some of them are involved covertly in what's happening in Syria.
Oh, so, absolutely. There is no way that the kinds of things we're seeing happening there, the flows of weaponry, many of the incidents could possibly happen without that. And in fact, as I just pointed out in an article the other day, in Libya, you know, where they tried to present that as entirely a spontaneous uprising, after the fact, they were bragging about how involved they were in there, covertly forcing the inevitable conclusion. And so the fact that we can't even apply their admissions in Libya to Syria tells you how bad things are. But I have to say that I know you were talking about how it's not having enough of an impact, but I would argue that it's just that not enough people know about these things. I know that in the case of our website, whowhatwhy.com, we're fairly new. Most people haven't heard of it. More and more do every day. But it really is, the great thing about the Internet is it's there for all to read. And we also work very hard not to take a particularly obvious partisan approach.
Russ, yeah. I'm sorry to cut you off, but you know, part of what I'm trying to do here is to promote websites like yours and other voices that are not heard in the mainstream media, and I really appreciate your coming on to join us. We do have one caller on the line, but you have to be quick because we're at the 12:30 point, or rather the 1:30 point, the half hour, and we have another guest waiting.
Hi.
Jeanette.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to thank you for your amazing show and the insights that you're giving us, and also to bring up that, as Muammar Gaddafi said when this uprising seemed to be spilling out of control, is that al-Qaeda is active in his country, and then NATO came in to give them cover, that al-Qaeda is an arm of the U.S. government. It's the base of operation in that region in the world. It was used against the Russians in Afghanistan. It's been used almost in an unbroken sense since then, and it's a way, it's an ugly, you know, unseen arm of the U.S. government to meddle into other countries' affairs. And if it is in Syria, and if it is, you know, ongoing in Iran, then it's, you know, with not only our blessing, but it's with direction from Washington.
And thanks, Jeanette. Thanks for your point of view. I'm just rushing you because we have to move on to the next guest. Thanks for joining us. Stay with us here on News Dissector Radio on PRN FM.
Wish you were as soft and smooth.
The world in a
40% of the station carried no news of the world.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch is Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen. The camera, the sword, by a Coke, by a Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
And experience your psychic connection.
We don't have shit to say. We don't have anything to do.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. But do we even know who plans to see? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit. Slim slam diagram, data jam, handicap caught it. Yo, you bought it. My mind is a profitable thing to waste. You want another taste, baby? Got news good.
What we need to know.
News good.
What we want to know.
News good.
What we think we know.
Got remote control to choose the show. But the more we watch, the less we know.
To chase and to walk home via Wells Fargo.
Just had a very heated discussion about Syria. You heard from Russ Baker. You heard a caller basically suggesting there's a deal between al-Qaeda and the United States. Al-Qaeda is actually a tool of the United States. There are a lot of different perspectives here. In all of them, I don't want it to be lost, you know, that I am as concerned as anybody about the suffering of people in Syria, the people who are dying, the people who are being shot down in the streets by the government or by the so-called rebels. You know, this is a humanitarian crisis, no question, but it's not clear what the answers are. A humanitarian intervention by NATO in Libya did not result in a, you know, democratic regime. Instead, There's faction fighting going on. Reports of Al-Qaeda really establishing itself in Benghazi, which was always a sort of Al-Qaeda base. So, you know, things may seem on the surface to call for a solution, but often those solutions are extremely messy. Right now, Medicine Without Frontiers, a very respected organization, is suggesting that the Syrian government is basically carrying on a campaign of unrelenting repression against people wounded in demonstrations and on the medical workers trying to treat them. So this is a reality, but it's a reality that often occurs in war. And in this case, what we have here is a war that's emerging, a war that might be, in essence, the forerunner of a larger war with Iran. So we can't, you know, object to that. The United States likes to talk about dominoes. They did for years on Vietnam. You know, somehow if they can knock off the regime in Syria, then they can get ready to organize a global coalition to go after Iran. And so we need a lot more to understand what's really going on, to be able to cut through all the propaganda. You can join us on the phone at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Again, we're having some problems reaching our guest that's supposed to be joining us now, so I'm going to keep talking with you here about these issues, but it would help me and my voice if you called in and shared your views as well. 888-874-4888. So that's the number. And News Dissector Radio is really an extension of the News Dissector blog, which has been offline through no fault of our own, a kind of act of sabotage. Hopefully it will be back soon as newsdissector.net. So please watch for that as well, because I'm having, you know, clearly difficulties here trying to weave my way through a tremendous amount of information and guests who are not able to be reached for various reasons. Doesn't make it any easier. So I want to continue now and talking a little bit about a general discussion of what's going on. We see, for example, countries, whole countries being sacrificed to the financial order, new world order of Wall Street and big business. The Greek people have been out on general strikes and protests and demonstrations ever since the most savage austerity programs were imposed on them, cutbacks of jobs, cutbacks of services and the like. At least in Greece, you have a history of resistance, certainly to Germany during the Second War and now to Germany again during this economic conflict. So we have an uprising going on all over the world, not just at the Occupy movement in America. This is something that's very significant because the global axis seems to be changing. More and more power in the corporate centers, more and more power in the finance industries, less and less influence among citizens as their government. We heard earlier reports of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on lobbying. John Stewart last night did a really, you know, funny but tragic report on what was happening, you know, in Congress as Congress people began to engage in insider trading to enrich themselves on information that they were gaining from the Congress, and whole institutions began to descend on Capitol Hill to suck up bits and pieces of information that they could sell to hedge funds and to other financial institutions called private intelligence, if you will. And, you know, the consequence of this is the 1% of people in power, the 0.01%, whatever it is, have disproportionate influence and power. The people have less and less power unless we organize it in some way. Despite our majority, we can be very easily bamboozled if people don't organize, and that's really what the Occupy movement is all about. 888-874-4888 to join us on the line here, on the call-in line on the program. We're still trying to reach our guest, who may or may not be reachable. Hard to know. Eve Smith is the editor of NakedCapitalism.com, a website you should know of. about and should check out. She's been extremely skilled at analyzing what's really going on, what the government says, what the government does, how this mortgage program that was initiated supposedly to be paid for the bank, she's now reporting today that in fact the taxpayers will be paying for a lot of it. So again, you know, deception seems to be built into the DNA of our news business and of our democracy, what is left of it right now. And the consequence of that is that it's harder and harder for ordinary people to have a say or to have their needs and their interests represented in politics. So we're moving along here. 888-874-4888 is the phone number. I'll slow down a little bit and try to get into some of these issues in more detail, because I'm very troubled, obviously, by what's happening, which is why I've been involved in blogging and writing books and all the rest of it. I have a new book out. It's not commercially available yet, but it's called Occupy, Dissecting Occupy Wall Street. And it's a book which I will be happy to send you the PDF of if you're interested, if you write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org. I want to, you know, give something back to the listeners of this program, dissector@mediachannel.org. I'll be able to share that with you, but this book is coming out, is now available in printed form, and not yet in the marketplace. But it's something based on my own observations of watching the Occupy movement develop from really before September 17th. I was in Spain and I visited the occupation of the indignados, the indignant ones, the people who were challenging the Spanish political parties and the Spanish government. And, you know, saw how they managed to organize an encampment and keep that encampment going and win a tremendous amount of popular support by the honesty of their positions, by their willingness to fight for the rights of people, including people who are losing their homes, which is something that Occupy here in New York also picked up on. But that movement, you know, one symbolic action, one house saved, is not the same thing as a program for organization a way of really reaching out to homeowners and trying to persuade them that you have their interests at heart, and so that they will work with you. You know, we can't have kind of a group of avenging angels decide that they're going to themselves save America. The people of America have to get involved in all of this, and this is something that we need your involvement and your understanding of. Occupy has really been practicing a form of direct democracy with its general assemblies. There's an effort there for everybody to have a say, but it's also a very difficult process to get anything done that way, because a handful of people can be obstructionist, can block agreement on things, can undermine attempts to achieve consensus. And this is what, you know, Occupy is facing. I was at a recent Occupy event at Washington Square Park, kind of Occupy Love. It was, you know, a Valentine's Day. It was very well-spirited. There was singing by the Raging Grannies. There was, you know, some folks out there. But it was kind of unfocused, in my opinion, in terms of really, there was people were substituting slogans for substantive programs. There was a march on Bank of America branch over on Second Avenue here in New York. I mean, people are still militant. They're still active. They're still angry. But it's been very difficult to actually get this movement to really challenge the system. Eve Smith, thank you for joining us. I know it's a little late, so let's see if we can't talk a little bit about your own background and your blog, Naked Capitalism.
Hi, Danny.
Oh, sorry. Oh, Bill Bowles. Okay, I'm clear.
Am I on air?
You're on the air now, Bill. You're a little late, maybe 45 minutes late. Our other guest isn't here, but now that you have joined us...
You know, I can't hear you very well.
How about now? Can you hear me now?
A little better.
Okay.
A little better, but the line is very fuzzy, you know, kind of muffled.
All right. I don't know who else is listening in on you, Bill, but give us your sense of what's happening in
world,
in Syria. You've been very critical of this Syrian intervention and very suspicious about the forces involved in it. Why don't you share your views?
You want me to talk now?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I don't know where to start with this, Annie. I just feel so so angry and kind of depressed about the situation. Having seen, you know, a kind of dry run performed in Libya, with virtually the same plot line being carried out in Syria, I just find it inconceivable that we can't, that people can't see what is going on here. Aside from anything else, I mean, it seems to me that without the active participation of the media in selling the whole idea of humanitarian intervention or whatever you want to call it, that this whole scam would not have been possible to pull off. I just finished writing a piece where I went through BBC reports on Syria, and over and over.
Oh. You know, we live in a modern communications era, so you would think. You would think that you could place a phone call to England and that, you know, someone in England could actually be heard speaking back to you. But for some reason, maybe it's the surveillance satellites, maybe it's just, you know, the propensity of technology to screw up when you need it most, as often happens to me whenever I'm showing anybody anything on the internet that I might have done, and the minute, you know, you get the website up, something happens and it's gone. You know, this is a kind of, I guess, a part of the problem here of, you know, over-dependence on technology. We're hoping to bring you a program with voices from all around the world. Last week we had two very thoughtful observers in Iran, Iranians actually speaking here on PRN.FM, offering perspectives that you don't hear in most of the American media. Now I have Bill Bowles on the line. I don't know if we can get him back or not. We could try to get him back. You know, cut off in mid-sentence. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just cursed today. It's Friday, but it's not even Friday the 13th. But nevertheless, I seem to be having these problems that I'm not sure how to solve. But, you know, I'll keep going here. I mean, what Bill is basically looking at is, you know, the coverage in Britain. And he's also very concerned that, you know, a leading activist in England, Tariq Ali, who's been, you know, in the forefront of anti-war movements, is now supporting some sort of armed intervention in the guise of humanitarianism in Syria to stop the Syrian government from assaulting people. At the same time, you know, you have questions about, you know, the consistency. Is this liberal interventionism actually effective? Does it work? Does it really help save people's lives? Or does it lead, in essence, to other forces like in Libya, factions, Al-Qaeda influenced groups seizing power? Bill, continue with what you were saying. Let's hope we can get through another paragraph here.
Sorry, say that again?
Yes, please pick up where you left off. I sort of filled in a little bit.
Okay, yeah. Hopefully you can hear me okay. I was going through some stories from the BBC on media coverage of the situation in Syria as it's unfolded. And over and over again, the same phrase came up when it came to reporting on events, alleged events that have taken place inside Syria, and it was, activists say, that's it, no more. There are no other, you know, sources of the information that one can cross-check against in terms of what the activists say, and over again. And one particular one, which the BBC picked up on, which was where activists say that the Russians and the Chinese veto the UN resolution on Syria, then it's a license to kill. Do you see what I mean? That everything in the
Well, okay, he did get I don't know if it was a paragraph, but a few more sentences in. I don't know how to resolve this situation, but, you know, what he's talking about is sort of the buzzwords that get reinforced endlessly. You know, we're fighting for freedom. The people want democracy. The people are being sorted in the streets, as some have been. I mean, this is an authoritarian military-style government, but it's also a non-religious government, and that itself is very interesting. You know, you have Syria, a non-sectarian government, and you know, three weeks ago or a month ago or before this started, that would be considered to be progress as opposed to religious fundamentalism, which we say we oppose. But we don't oppose it certainly in Saudi Arabia. We don't oppose it in Qatar. We don't oppose it in Bahrain, which is ruled by a king that's a despotic. In fact, the whole Bahrain situation is getting virtually no attention. Six Americans, part of a team of international observers, were just arrested in Bahrain. I haven't seen that report anywhere except on a progressive website. So we're not getting a balanced view of all of this, is I guess the point I keep making here. And that's why I'm suggesting we have to read more widely. We have to take, it's one thing to blame the media. It's another thing to take responsibility yourself and seek out information from critical sources that might be able to offer information that you don't have and don't know. And in that way, and that's where, you know, PRN FM comes in. We're trying to offer information and analysis from guests from all over the world, particularly when we can get them on the phone and we can actually sustain a connection. I'm sure it wasn't our fault, but this is the sort of thing that seems to happen with frequency when you don't have, you know, kind of a giant corporate supported institution with all the latest technology. Our technology usually works, so I won't blame us this time. I do feel frustrated about it because I wanted you to hear from this guy. He has a lot to say. You can check out his website, williambowles.info, for his point of view. And of course, Who, What, Why, which is the news website, you know, of our earlier guest, who was, you know, basically challenging the media frame of Russ Baker, challenging how Syria is being covered. These are issues that are important. These are issues that we need to know more about. And these are issues that only we can learn about if we make the effort and turn to the people who are really in the truth business, not in the news business, who are trying to bring you perspectives and voices that you don't hear in our media world right now. And that's why I'm here with News Dissector Radio. You can write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org. Forgive me, my voice seems to be going and fading. I've had a cold all week. I thought I'd be okay by now, but I'm still feeling the strain. You can check out my website, Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, and mediachannel1.org, mediachannel1.org, which has more information, more perspectives on the news media. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you for being there. Thanks to Matt and the gang at PRN for trying as hard as they could to hook everybody up, and some who would not be hooked. So there you go. I'll be back again next week, same time, same station, Progressive Radio Network. Be there.
Your Honor, for many years, I operated a Ponzi scheme through the investment advisory side of my business. I knew what I was doing was wrong, indeed criminal.
The shine on America's shoes got gold.
When Wall Street stepped into the fold.
Congress paid off, workers laid off.
Stanford, AIG, and Madoff.
Credit swaps, credit stops, empty wallets and empty shops, and bank walking and strip clubs.